on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. It's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Here we are, the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name's Alon.
And my name's Ara.
And my name is Rich.
And we also have a guest, Ara.
Yes, we do. Yes, our guest tonight is Ashish Amresh, who's a lecturer at the elongated name of the School of Computing Informatics and Decision Systems Engineering at Arizona State University.
Wow, what a surprise we had to write that down.
So...
Now, this is someone you've worked with in the past when you're doing that Camp Game stuff, right?
Yep. So I actually work with Ashish. We do this thing called Camp Game. So he's going to be here. He's going to hang out with us the whole show, and he's going to actually talk about his computer gaming certificate. Is that the right terminology?
Yeah, computer gaming certificate, and also talk a little bit about Camp Game. And once again, thank you for having me here, guys.
Right on. So he's going to talk about that in our second segment. But
until then... We have all sorts of stuff to talk about. Who wants to start,
all
Rich?
All kinds of stuff.
Do we all just raise our hands and see who wants to start?
What are we talking about, like the Xbox update?
Yeah, let's do that, because that came
Activision.
Out like today, right?
Yeah, that's released today. That's the new hotness, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, so you're the one who knows most about this. Let me know. What are the awesome things it does?
They updated it, and it's got a bunch of stuff.
How long does it take you to download the update?
Yeah, here's the first thing that I was delighted by. It took about maybe 2 to 3 minutes tops to completely update my Xbox, and I was like, hey, that didn't take an hour like it did when we updated Alon's PS3 that one time.
Yeah, well,
five
times. Like, it's ridiculous how long it takes for the PS3 to update anything. So yeah. that was exciting. And then obviously it makes everything just kind of run a little bit faster. It's got a whole bunch of stuff. You can watch Netflix movies with a group of friends and your little chat things, whatever they
Doesn't
call it.
Doesn't it do that pseudo like movie theater thing where it actually shows your avatars walking into a theater?
Yeah.
Totally stolen from PlayStation.
Okay,
Network,
so wait, why is that good?
Whatever. It's like a, you can have your own little mystery science theater.
It's a virtual date thing, right? In the
virtual
past.
Virtual date.
So my roommate used to have this virtual DVD watching date with a girl. So like they would, over Xbox or over cell phone or whatever, they would just stay on and watch the movie together and chat, right? But they had to sync the movie up manually.
Yeah.
So wait,
a lot of people actually do this.
So this person actually coordinated a literal virtual date by having his date watch the same movie as him.
At the same time.
Yeah. At the same time in different locations.
Yes.
And
people do this.
Little snide comments through the phone.
I mean, I don't know if their goal was to make snide comments, but their goal was to experience the same thing at the same time without being in the same place.
Without being able to see the other person touch them.
And so PlayStation Home has done this. You can watch trailers and stuff. I don't know if they ever actually implemented whole movies. But you would actually, your avatar would walk into a theater and sit down, and then you could zoom in on it so it was full screen. But you'd be in there, and you could actually, if you weren't full screen, you could hear the other people around you and stuff. So anyway, Xbox Live, now with their Netflix streaming.
People do this?
People do it, because, I mean, they already have, I mean, it's just an extension of their their party group thing, where you can have, like, 8 people in a party, and they can all be doing different things, or you can be playing the same game, or people would actually watch a movie. And be in a group together. So now it just automatically synchronizes.
I'm confounded just by this whole concept.
So the downside, though, is that I'm guessing that everyone needs to have access to the same movie file.
Yeah.
Right? So you either have to all be
Either you have Netflix or you don't.
So they don't allow it for, let's say you've downloaded from the video marketplace.
It's Netflix only. It's not marketplace.
It's only Netflix streaming. So that's kind of a bummer. If you both had the same movie, which would totally encourage their sales, right? Two sales of the same movie, if you want to share it with somebody else.
I guess. So I guess if you don't have the ability to, watch a movie together in a dark room looking away from each other, then I guess you can do it virtually.
Honestly, I think a great business move for them would be to allow single user sharing of a single file. So if I bought a movie legitimately over Xbox Live Marketplace, right? Uh-huh. And I have the sale for it, and I want to share that experience with someone else. And they have this whole live streaming thing now too, right? 1080p, watch as you stream or as you download, which I never believed would work, and we'll wait to see if that actually works. anyway, so if one person buys it, they should be able to share that with a single other person so that they can have that experience. And then they'll say, oh, well, next week it's my turn and I'll buy the movie, right?
But they'll never want to give up that cashola.
Well, no, it's not giving it up. It's what actually encourages sales. Now, if you said one person can stream in a group of like eight people, that's a different story. But one person, that person
you might have a point there. The outcome really isn't clear. Yeah. It might actually encourage people to do
it. The non-purchaser wouldn't be able to store it or watch it at any other time, but they could watch it while they're connected in a session with someone else who did purchase it. That's, I think, a good business move.
It's like renting a movie and having five people come over and watching it rather than five people paying for a movie to watch it.
Exactly.
Oh, but you know if the great monolithic corporations could charge per person for private viewings, they sure would.
But that's not the biggest part of the update. I mean, that's a small part of it.
I just like thinking of fascinating new revenue models. Mm-hmm. So
how about those newfangled ratings? How about that?
Yeah, they're doing 5-star ratings where everybody can rate the games, and this game's good, this game's bad.
So it's almost just like exactly what Amazon does, basically.
For a library of games that exist in stores, or only the downloadable games?
All the downloadable stuff. So, I mean, basically anything that's on the market can be rated. If it's Xbox Live Arcade games, games on demand, I believe trailers and stuff like that can all be rated.
All right. I wonder if it's kind of lame that you could probably rate the demo separately from the final.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd assume they'd have the same rating, but I guess full game demos would be different than, like, you could get the new Batman Arkham Asylum demo, but obviously the game isn't available to download.
Then the question is, can you rate something without having purchased it?
Probably.
And that's lame.
Yeah.
Because that'll encourage...
I haven't played around with it very much yet, but
I would like them to restrict it to people who have access to that game and then not be able to rate the demos.
Yeah,
how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I don't think it's as much sense as rating demos. I mean, come on, it's a demo.
Get the full experience, right?
It makes no sense. Are you rating the demo? It becomes this weird meta thing. Are you rating the demo, or are you rating what you think the game might be like based on the demo?
Exactly.
If it's a demo to a full release game, that would make sense to rate that. But if it's a demo of the Xbox Live Arcade game, that kind of wouldn't make
sense. I think
sense.
They should just leave
you mean
it
because
to
the real game's games. Not available online.
Yeah, because the real game's not available online. Like right now, like
of course,
the Batman,
it might be now.
The Batman demo is available right now, so you'd want to rate the demo where you can't even buy the game yet. It's not in stores yet.
Yeah.
So
I bet companies would actually have a problem with you rating the demos because it's not a complete game experience.
Yeah, it's just all messy. And I don't know. I don't really see any utility in doing things like rating things like that.
No, actually, I was going to say rating expansion content is actually great. You can say, I think it's worth what they're charging.
Yeah, maybe.
Right, but do they allow comments or just star ratings?
I think it's
at this
just,
point, it's just star ratings.
It seems as if it's just that, and it doesn't even do that nice granular thing that Amazon does where they show like how many voted 5, how many voted 4, histogram.
They're adding more stuff to it. I mean, it's not a perfect system immediately.
I love the histograms, and I love the word.
I think
and
if they
the
if
thing.
They give us only biannual updates, it probably should be perfect the first time.
Yeah, whatever. Who cares about ratings?
Sony, they let crap through all the time and minor updates because they make you update every 5 days, which is ironic because their updates take so long. But
yeah. But
at least you're getting new stuff all the time.
There's a whole bunch more though on the update. Obviously they're adding.
Isn't it your job to know this?
They're adding the Facebook. They added Twitter.
Oh, the Twitters.
Last.fm streaming radio. Games on demand. There's a bunch of stuff.
So
in there,
what does this mean? We can tell who's sitting on the can now through Xbox
now
Live.
Now I can do my job
while playing games
on my Xbox.
So you can read Twitters and you can like be like, hey, look, I'm playing this game, and it'll go, ooh, Twitter.
If only I had access to email. So, Ashish, you don't know this about me, but my day job involves me just being on Twitter all day.
Excellent.
I get paid for being on Twitter.
I wish I had that job.
Yeah, no, you've got probably a more exciting job. But now I can just – I have a legitimate reason to expense an Xbox for the office. So that's fascinating for me, not so much for all of our listeners.
That's very interesting.
That's probably the reason why they don't have email yet.
Yeah, well, maybe. They don't want me doing my whole job. All right,
so are we done with this? You got more?
I don't know. Rich, anything?
I mean, that's pretty much all. That's
so there's movie
all
stuff.
The stuff that's in the update.
There's ratings. There's the instant streaming of movies.
Yeah.
They claim 1080p immediate watching of videos.
I want to test that out, but like I don't want to spend $8
right?
to rent a movie.
Maybe immediate starting of videos, but I'm a little dubious about
the instant
watching.
On 1080p is just technologically ridiculous.
I just don't know if I believe downloading 2 gigs in 2 hours for all users.
It'll start right away. Whether it stutters 80 times halfway through is another story.
All right. So you seem antsy to move on to something else here.
Yeah, I'm pretty antsy. Well, we don't have a lot of time left, but I got a lot of little stories here.
Oh, we got a whole show in front of us, man.
We got a lot of little things that I like to insert right before the break. So,
all right.
The first one is...
Insert me.
Yes, that's excellent. All right. So the first one is... I was talking about this, I think even on this show. Maybe you may remember... I said, I want to have a attachment for the Wii that's completely spherical, so I can just play this one game, this Marble Mania game, and control it with the Wii.
Yes.
With the sphere
I remember
in my hands.
I don't think that's why the sphere was created.
That's not why it was created, but it has been done. They actually made – it's supposed to be a bowling ball, okay? It's a bowling ball with two hemispheres. You open it up. You put in the Wii controller. You close it up, and you're supposed to bowl with it. But this is fantastic because now I don't have to, although I'm a little disappointed because kind of doing these kind of like little independent projects is a pleasure in and of itself. But now I don't have to go make my own. I can actually buy this ball and
play.
How
hard would it have been to make your own?
Probably not hard.
You can get a styrofoam ball for $10 and put a Wiimote.
Yeah. So it'll probably be a short project, but. So you can do that, or you can get the bowling ball and accidentally throw it in your TV and make an even bigger mess than you could with the Wiimote previously.
Yeah.
Good job.
But have you tried it with the Coco Mojo whatever game you have?
No, I haven't actually purchased the ball. I have just looked at the picture, and for some reason this bowling ball attachment is pink.
All right. Well, the one we used to look at was blue. But we've definitely talked about that before.
Yeah, so that's good times.
All right. What else you got? We got 1.5 minutes.
One thing really quickly, we... ran out of time last week. This actually happened last Tuesday, and this is just incredible to me. This is absolutely unprecedented in terms of not only games but just technology. So there's a game called Wipeout HD, and it came out, and they recently added ads to it. And when they added ads to it, even though it's been out for a while, suddenly the loading time of the game apparently doubled from like 9 seconds. To 18 seconds.
Not loading of the whole game, but loading of like individual levels or something.
Yeah, something like that. I don't have the game, so I'm going off of news stories here. And so everybody started complaining. And amazingly, that very same day, Sony actually
they took the offending ad out. There was one particular ad, right?
Yes, well, they changed it, and they actually released a statement that said, we noticed that this is pretty lame, and we've removed it.
Yeah.
So actually, kudos to Sony for so quickly recognizing that their insertion of ads that extend loading times is not kosher among gamers.
So basically, we can just add the tally. The world has a count of 485, and Sony has a count of what, like one?
Sony has one.
One good move.
Right. And the world will have go up to 486 and 7 after we come back from this break.
All right. We'll be right back.
Visit us online at 1100kfnx.com.
And we're back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Now, we've got Ashish here, our guest for tonight, lecturer at the School of Computing Informatics, Distance and Distance Engineering at ASU.
At ASU. And let me tell you about another fantastic school in the area.
Oh, yeah. What's
that?
The
University of Advancing Technology.
Indeed.
You can learn more about them at uat.edu. They're a whole program. You go there just for games or for, like, security and other unfun stuff. But you can go there for game development.
You can.
Yeah. We like to mention them a couple times a show.
Or, ironically enough, you can go to Ashish's program.
You could also do that.
And so, Ashish, why don't you tell us a little bit about this gaming certificate thing?
Sure. It's my pleasure to be here again. And basically, in short, we are not a full-blown game development major like UAT has to offer. We just started small. And at ASU now, we finally have, for anyone at ASU, any student, any undergraduate student, to enroll and take a certificate called the Gaming Certificate. And what the certificate is it's 18 credits, six courses that a student can take and specialize in various different fields in game development, including programming, art, education, business, and design. So it's pretty open-ended for accommodating all kinds of majors and students with different tastes. But the common binding element is that students who have always wanted to be part of video game development or have always wanted to have their own games made but have positioned themselves in different majors or different career choices now have an opportunity to tap into this additional certificate that is available through the gaming certificate.
Now, there's one thing I was just thinking about that I'm a little curious about. So, because you mentioned that it's available to anybody. So what if you're like, I don't know, like a kinesiology major or something? Is this, if you have no experience with computers or programming, is this an appropriate thing to do?
Absolutely. Anyone can take this this certificate because we start from the very beginning and we build up skills after skills. And we don't assume any prerequisites whatsoever for the students when they sign up for the gaming certificate. So it starts very basic, starts off with minimal computer knowledge and technology knowledge, and then builds up one layer at a time. It's interesting that you brought up kinesiology because
I was just trying to think of like what's the most different and lamest major, but maybe kinesiologists will get angry.
Yeah, we actually have a student from kinesiology.
Please don't stick him on me.
And the reason that person's in the program is because he's always wanted to use games for therapy, and how that's what's the nice thing about the gaming certificate is that it gives opportunity to apply games in fields other than entertainment. So we have students from geography who are trying to look at GIS based games. We have students from nutrition who are looking at health based games. We have students from business who are looking at how to use games as training and productivity modules and so on and so forth. So the list goes on, and that's exactly what differentiates our certificate from any other school that's offering a video game program. We cater to a wide variety of students, and they can then choose these skills and apply it in their area of expertise.
So I already have a couple of questions. Right off the bat, I would expect that most of the people who try to enter this program are probably comp sci students already, at least a large number of them, I'm guessing, who would have the interest to go do this. So if you're starting right from the beginning and they already have experience programming, they don't need to start ground level, what happens to them? Do they just skip past a couple courses?
So even though they are comp sci students, and so let me first answer your first part. Initially, when we offered the certificate 2 years ago, when it was in the baby stages, there were a lot of computer science students. Interestingly, right now, out of our 150 students, maybe 40 or 50 are computer science. So there's about 100 students that are from outside of computer science.
Yeah. That's still a large percentage.
There's a good percentage, yeah. And it's obviously going to be expected since we are in the engineering school in the computer science department that there's going to be a lot of our students taking the certificate. However, to come back to your second point, the way the curriculum is structured, students start taking that in their freshman year. And try and ramp up as they come to their junior or, maybe starting senior year and finish the certificate before they finish their major. So even if there's a computer science student in the certificate, that student's actually starting from scratch along with his major and, joins the certificate during the freshman year. So in reality, a lot of this is complementary to a computer science student because they're learning a lot of, applications of technology and design and architecture from the games perspective early on because they don't get to see all of this until they get to their junior or sophomore stages anyway.
So you've got this program that spans several years, which is actually really good for someone who wants to build a game. I know that other programs try to steer their students to actually produce a final product of some sort, right, of varying degrees of professionalism and completion. But is there that sort of expectation or drive in the program to say, okay, you're starting now, start thinking about it early on because 3 years from now when you're done with this, we'd love you to have a final product that you could even pitch to someone and help get a job with. Is there that sort of drive or expectation?
Yeah, absolutely. The last course that is a must course to complete is called the Gaming Capstone. that every student in the certificate has to finish. And one of the underlying principles of the gaming capstone is that now that you've learned all these skills in the other five courses, you have to apply them in a real-world experience, in a real-world setting, in a real-world problem, working with industry. So we have a whole bunch of industry partners that give us real problems, that, you know, not just the entertainment industry, which is what makes it nice. We have people from Mayo Clinic giving us problems that they would like to solve in the health field. We have Garmin working with us, you know, trying to see what kind of GIS problems gaming students can solve. We have educational companies like Pearson and Adaptive Curriculum that we are partnered with. So we get a lot of problem sets that are real, that the world today needs. And what we do is throw this in front of the gaming students in their last stage, which is the gaming capstone, and have them give a new perspective, a new angle, a new solution to this. And hopefully what we feel that at the end of the day, they would have had this full-rounded experience of learning a lot of cool new skills via the gaming certificate and then applying it to solve real-world problems and indirectly building their portfolio and helping them get a better job in their careers.
So is the result of this capstone just them coming up with a solution conceptually, or do they actually produce a final product?
It is actually a final product. It's a final working solution and not just a conceptual.
But they do that in just that final semester?
In the final semester in a team. So it's usually a 4 to 5-member team working.
So that's a really short amount of time. I mean, you're not building whole games. Like you said, it's a problem you're solving, right?
From some industry. Yeah, and it shouldn't be compared to a full-blown game production cycle, which takes a long multiple semesters at different other schools that offer game development degrees. This would be looking at using gaming technologies to solve a particular instance. So, for example, maybe using the Wiimote as a simple rehabilitation or physical therapy tool for patients. Okay, mm-hmm. So something like that, which does not require a full 18-month production cycle, are the kind of problems that we give them. We don't expect our gaming certificate students, because of the way the certificate is structured, to actually come up with full-blown, fully functional, hours and hours of gameplay kind of games, which take a lot of time.
So you're looking at your students and saying, all right, semester two, start working in a group, working on a mod, and then by semester seven, you'll have a nearly finished mod or product that you've been working on over the course of your experience.
No, that's totally not the point of the gaming certificate. And that's why it's a certificate and not a full-blown major. I mean, if it was a full-blown major where they're just focusing on video games and using video games as an entertainment medium, that would make perfect sense. For our audience, gaming means that it's an additional skill set apart from whatever they're learning. They could be a physics major, they could be a geography major, and this is an additional tool set to complement what they're currently learning in college. And that's why we've structured it in this manner, so that it adds on to what their current skill sets are.
That's interesting. Is there an example that shines in your mind of a particular success that's happened in the past?
We launched the baby classes 2 years ago, and we are officially now in the books at ASU. We still haven't had a class graduate at the capstone yet.
Okay,
this is just a conceptual stage. We'll have our first capstone next year, which would be two groups of students graduating next year. That'll be our first batch of gaming certificate graduates. And at that point in time, I would actually know how well it went out. We have a lot of ideas that we're throwing around because they're already started thinking about what kind of capstones they want to attack. But we don't have anything that we can showcase or exhibit to the audience yet. Right.
Is there like a final presentation from these people that is I could just go sit in and watch what they have to present? Is that part of it?
Yeah, at the end of the capstone class, there's a capstone seminar that the entire audience and anyone who wants to see.
Do you want to go to that, Ara? We can go watch some capstones now?
I would love to go to that.
Yeah, nice. And more information about this is at gaming.asu.edu. Has all the information about our certificate.
We'll go over that again before the end of the show. For now, we'll go to break. We'll be right back.
Mario, you're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woo-hoo!
Oh my god, we're back! Chatterbox Video Game Radio! We still have Ashish with us. Ashish, excuse me, with us.
Get it right.
In the studio. It's really hard. So we have a couple more things to finish up, or are we going to switch over?
Yeah, no, I've got a couple more questions for him. And actually, I also want to give out the phone number in case anybody wants to call in. Maybe you have a question for Ashish. Maybe you just want to harass us. Either way, it's cool. And that number is 866-536-1100. So, yeah, my only question I had left was, so somebody who goes through this certificate program, how would you characterize basically the skill set they leave with in terms of, you know, what technologies can they use, what do they know, what are they equipped with coming out of the program specifically that they didn't have going into it?
So the gaming certificate, as far as skills go, teaches the entire spectrum of the game production pipeline from start to scratch. Reiterating that they don't get to create a 18-month kind of a full-blown exhaustive game during the certificate, but they do get to create simple games that, you know, have 10 to 15 minutes of gameplay that can either be played, you know, in a 2D setting or via the internet through Flash. And so they get these experiences in the early on to kind of understand how games get made, what are the different stages from a plot, the simple idea to actual finish, which is a working game without bugs. So they go through that cycle. So they understand those skills. Then they choose what areas they want to concentrate on. So if they choose the programming track, they learn more about game engine architectures. They understand how the different components of a game engine and the whole game loop works. If they decide to choose the art track, then they learn everything from animation, modeling, skinning, rigging, texturing, and so on and so forth. They choose the education track, they focus their efforts on how to apply gaming tools and gaming technologies to better teach and promote learning and literacy. This track is completely handled by the College of Education, so we partner with them. And we also have the business side of gaming track, wherein you learn about production, scheduling, franchising, marketing, creating, you know, venture capital funding, how all of this works. If you have a new game idea, how do you get it to market? And that's handled by the College of Business. So we have great partnerships with other colleges, College of Education, College of Business, that offer other courses that complement, depending on the interest of the student, to finish the certificate.
And you have enough students to make all those courses viable?
Yeah. The nice thing is that a lot of the elective courses that are coming out from College of Business or from College of Education and from our school as well, our school offers the advanced programming and art electives, and these have other students as well. So some of these are hybrid courses, and some of and the core courses, which are the introduction to game design and development, and those are the ones that we offer, and we always have full students in them. As they move on to the electives, they're in classes with other students from these different schools, but in a lot of ways, the curriculum is made so that it does not affect one or the other. So it's streamlined in a way that both the audiences, whether they're part of the gaming certificate or not, get enough out of these courses.
All right.
Cool. So there's another thing that you do, which is called Camp Game, which actually I happen to be the design instructor for. And this is completely separate from the gaming certificate, right?
Exactly.
All right. So why don't you spend a couple minutes telling us about that, and then we'll move on to more fun stuff.
Camp Game is a very unique program for middle and high school students that explores and engages them various elements of game design and production so that they can better make an educated career decision of whether they want to continue on and explore video game industry as a possible career option. What's happened in recent years is everybody who plays games and has gotten really good at it thinks that they can also make games. And what usually happens is that it takes too long before they discover that, oh my God, it's not the same. And by that time, they've made too many flawed career choices that it's too late to make a switch. So what we're hoping with the Camp Game program is that educate middle school and high school students up early and expose them to the rigor and the discipline that's required for making games and putting them in teams, having them work together in different roles as programmers, as designers and artists, and simulate a working studio, working production environment for them over 6 weeks at ASU so that they can then re-estimate if this is really the right choice for them.
Yeah, so, one thing that I've been really impressed with, just really quickly, is that the mechanics of actually putting a game together, by and large, most of the students that I've had have been actually quite adept at getting the hang of. I mean, there's some students that are really good at it. There's some that were like, oh, I thought it was just playing games. I have to work now. I don't want to work. And there's a lot of that. But, yeah, overall, I've just been really impressed by a lot of the students' ability just to pick up what's going on. It's very, very, very advanced stuff for their age, and they're usually quite capable at it.
Now, forgive me if I'm setting the wrong tone, but what you just described is not – it's not to create game designers, but it's actually to filter out non-designers.
Well, I wouldn't frame it that way. It's more of
– That's what it sounded like.
It's a great tool for somebody who's, you know, what, middle school or high school to actually just figure out, is this really what I want?
It's like the rent versus buy scenario.
So, yeah, I mean, like, I wouldn't take the more insidious angle of, you know, weeding people out. I mean, I guess you could look at it that way, but...
Well, I just want to know, like, if your intro to the course is, hey, guys, truth is, you don't want this. This is not fun.
No, no, there's actually... I mean, I think what most kids find out is that, you know, there are some kids who really have a propensity to really pick up this stuff, and... For them, they discovered this early on, and they figured, wow, this is really something cool I want to do. There's another group that figures out that this is not what they were expecting in terms of just getting immediate satisfaction, and they have to work for it. And so I guess the ones that have not so much of a work ethic, or, you know, the ones who are not so detail oriented, I guess that's another big one. There's one student I had actually this year, who was incredibly smart. He was very, very eloquent. He's a really smart guy. You know, he played chess. He did all these other things. And even despite this, he realized that making games wasn't for him, because he was more of just the way his mind worked. He was more of kind of like a overall thinker. And so, like, very, he couldn't really... He always got bogged down in all these details, and that kind of just, like, rattled his mind, I guess. And so, like, yeah, in order to be a really, really good game developer, you have to think very, very precisely about all kinds of details. You have to be very, very detail-oriented. And by going through this program, he found out for himself that, wow, this is actually a lot more detail-oriented than what I'm used to or comfortable with.
Yeah.
Or want to do, or whatever. And so for him, you know, he decided maybe this isn't the best thing for me, but it wasn't for lack of, you know, dedication or intellect or whatever. It was just his brain was just not, he decided, you know, something built for making video games.
All right. I mean, for the record, I agree. There are total losers who shouldn't be making games, and they throw themselves in the program and then decide, oh, wait, I'm at the school that specializes in games, and I need to switch to something else, but oh, too bad. They don't have that option.
Yeah, and what we've also observed is that a program like this actually, whether it, you know, whether it's a filtering tool or not, one thing it does across the board is it regenerates an interest in technology and a determination to learn more, because what it does is it showcases how powerful technology can be and how it can be used as a very strong communication and an interactive medium. And that reinforces a lot of the determination for students to go back to their schools and apply themselves more at math and science, because they see the connection between math and science and technology, and see that if they are focused there, they can do anything. You know, so whether they end up making a career decision for games or not, universally in these programs, what it definitely does is a renewed interest in looking at technology, math, and science.
So do you actually present it that way at Camp Game, like you do with the certificate, saying you can use this technology for all sorts of things, not just games? Is it that way with Camp Game as well?
For them, not from an end product point of view, but we do connect the pieces in the curriculum so that they understand that, okay, they're using this tool, they're doing geometry. Why is that important to know concepts of geometry to do animation right? Or to do skinning, right? If you don't understand those concepts, you will be less equipped. You know, we make those kinds of connections between actual real-world math and science. You know, if they're working with collision detection. They're working with all kinds of complex physics. They know the tool does so and so and so. But if they understood the complex nature of these mechanisms that are happening behind the tool, then they can then apply it much better. So there is this indirect representation of real-world math and science that's happening during the curriculum, which you know, ties into this reinforcement that I'm talking about for them going back to their high schools and having a renewed focus on towards math and science.
Okay, so to make sure we get to a few other things, I just want to wrap this up. Is there some simple URL people can go to learn about it?
It's gaming.asu.edu.
Oh, that's easy enough, gaming.asu.edu. And remind me, where should we go to learn more about the certificate program that you were talking about?
Exactly the same place. Everything's is available at gaming.asu.edu.
Oh, both. Okay, great. Well, we've got like another minute before we go to break. Do we want to introduce a topic we'll go to next?
Yeah, so I've got a couple of small things. So she's just going to hang out with us and just jump in whenever you feel like it. So yeah, a couple of, have you guys seen a movie called Second Skin?
No.
This is wonderful. It's a documentary basically about MMO addiction, or when you talk about MMOs, you got to talk about World of Warcraft. So it's about World of Warcraft edition.
Someone actually mentioned that in my Twitter stream, yesterday or today, saying it was on Hulu.
Yeah. And it's on Hulu. So Everybody can go watch it for free right this second if you want to.
Everyone who's privileged enough to have a computer.
Well, yes, you have to have a computer.
And if they're listening to this, they probably have a computer.
But this movie was so eye-opening for me, only because I thought I was a hardcore gamer. No. Like, the people who are in this film have just taken it to levels beyond what my imagination can conceive.
All right.
And we'll give you guys a few examples of that when we return.
And I also want to mention a brand new Xbox Live Arcade game that comes out tomorrow that I got a chance to play at E3. So we'll talk about both those things as soon as we're back.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
And we're back. It's the final segment for Chatterbox Video Game Radio.
And of course, before we move on, I will remind everyone once again of the UAT.edu website for University of Advanced Technology. So go head over there, see what they're all about. And when you're done with that, go to gaming.asu.edu and learn about the camp game and the gaming certificate at ASU.
And when you're done with that, you can watch Second Skin on Hulu.
Yes, and when you're done with that,
You can listen to our show more.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Trials, or an Xbox Live Arcade game, which is called Trials HD. At E3 this year, I just walking around the Xbox. Like, there's an area of Microsoft's
Trials.
Trials.
Like what? Like it.
Like time trial.
Okay.
Trials. That's HD. Cool. It's got to be HD, I guess. I'm not sure why they added that. Maybe they thought the name was too lame. What they didn't realize is that it's still really lame. So the name is dumb, but the game itself is actually a lot of fun. So there's an area at E3 that's devoted more to like their Xbox Live stuff, yeah. Downloadable,
you know,
games.
That just sounds like if you just call the game demos.
Anyway, let me explain. I don't know if I talked about it after E3 or not, but I really enjoyed it. And I just wrote a blog about this for Golgatron, actually, for our listeners who visit golgatron.com. Feel free to go over there. I just published it. It's just a quick thing that has some YouTube videos and talks about how I like it. So one of the things I pointed out in that article was that I enjoy Xbox Live Arcade games, it seems, more than full-fledged games these days, because I don't remember who said this. It was someone from id or Epic or somebody was like, a game is basically just a single good element that maybe could last a few seconds, but stretched for the entire length of a game. Like, that's what makes a game, one good element that's just repeated over
and over. Not sure who said that.
I can't remember either. It might have even been someone from Bungie. Or they just used the example of Halo, which is basically you run and you shoot.
Right.
But they just did it really well and made it interesting enough that you do that over and over and over.
Sure, with lots of variations.
Yeah.
And of course, these days, what they normally do is they figure out that one thing doesn't last very long, and so they come up with 8 or 10 things that you do in random patterns, and then you have something
like Grand Theft Auto. But essentially, a game is just made up of a couple very core elements that are maybe presented in a different way.
I would say that the most elegantly designed games usually follow that pattern. Yeah.
So what's beautiful about Xbox Live Arcade games is it's basically just one. They come up with one good idea, and they don't try to hide it. They don't really pretend it's something else. They say, this is our game, and it does this one cool thing, and we're not going to pretend it's a 50-hour-long game.
Right, and that's classically what games have been until really as of late, when they've just become these huge gargantuan things. That I always keep bringing up like Grand Theft Auto is the best example of this, where they just, there's so many things to do. There's so many different types of modes in it. Actually, like Insomniac does this with a lot of their games. They're just like, you know, and then we started getting the idea of mini games in games, right? So they have just like games and games and games in other games, and then you have a game that lasts 80 hours.
Yeah, and we were actually just talking about Punch-Out during the break. And Punch-Out's a fine example of something that I think should just be a downloadable game. It's not really a full-fledged game. They present it as such.
But that's the thing, is that just that one thing doing over and over again is viable to be a game in and of itself.
Punch-Out's a little bit on the nose. Like, it's so much just doing the same thing over and over without anything interstitial that...
I mean, you could argue that it's not interesting enough, but it's, I mean, it certainly doesn't make it any less of
it. It would make a perfect caliber downloadable game. As a full-fledged disc game for $50...
Well, see,
whatever.
This is what they've done. They've already brainwashed you into thinking that you need a cavalcade of mini games in order to enjoy
it. Honestly,
something.
I think the reason they were able to pull it off with the new Wii version, and you could even say with the Super Nintendo version, is because it started off back in the day when games weren't as large as they are now. And it's just continuing that history, right?
Right.
Nostalgically. But anyway, my point is, back to Trials, it takes one good idea and just presents it really well. It's very polished. To explain what it is, you basically just control a motorcycle rider on a motorcycle, and you have to get from A to B in a level. It's kind of like a motorcycle puzzle game.
Is this like that 2D game that they have on the PC where you control like the pitch of your bike and you try and
I don't know what you're talking about, but that is basically what it is. Like, you control your speed and you control your the pitch or the tilt of the character.
And it's like a side view, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely 2D. I mean, it's presented in 3D geometry and stuff, but it's definitely a 2D gameplay. And you actually control the body of the character, but by doing so, you control the tilt of the machine, right? And so you can do flips and stuff, but that's it. There's no buttons. It's just the two analog sticks, and you're just moving forward and tilting.
That's what I was going to ask you, if it uses the right analog stick or not.
And so, like, you go off jumps, and then you have to land at the you know, proper tilt in order to land on the landing ramp, and you have to, you know, jump over barrels and not get blown up and whatever. But my point is, I played it at 83. It was a lot of fun as a downloadable game. I wouldn't go tell you to buy it for $60. As a downloadable game, it was actually a lot of fun. It's very polished. It has a level editor in it. Like I said, on Golgatron.com, I put up an article that has a video of gameplay and a video of the level editor. And I just wanted to mention it because I got some press release communications from the guys recently and saying it's going to come out tomorrow.
Isn't it out today?
Or it's August 12th. Which is tomorrow, I believe.
That doesn't make sense.
August 12th is tomorrow. That doesn't
make sense. I know,
but
games always come out on Tuesdays on Xbox Live.
Go right to XboxLive.com, search for Trials. It says,
since Xbox Live started, like, Tuesdays have always been the days, and then PSN always
hasn't
gets
Hasn't it always been Wednesdays?
Thursdays.
I don't know.
It's always been Tuesdays.
Rich demands an explanation.
Well, I'm telling you, it claims to be released on Wednesday. I haven't actually gone to the marketplace.
Okay.
So it's honestly a little bit expensive. I would have expected $10, but they're doing $15.
Yeah, they're doing $15 for that one, and then Shadow Complex, I think, is $15 next week as well.
Is that coming out already?
Next week. I've been waiting for
Shadow
I'm
Complex
really
and Trials
curious
Run.
About Shadow Complex.
I really want to play
those two
it.
Are behind one another
but,
at
E3. One thing about, well, Trials, you said, is the dual analog stick, and then Shadow Complex is the same thing. Which works, but it kind of makes me a little bit more sad.
Shadow Complex, I'm surprised, is only analog sticks. I never played it, though.
I think it uses buttons, but it uses both. But I recently got the arcade stick, the Capcom, or the whatever, fight stick, whatever.
The crappy Capcom
and so,
stick.
The fight stick, whatever.
Not the tournament stick.
Got not the tournament stick, the fight stick. And it works fine.
I've
but,
used three different ones, and two of them have problems, yours included.
No, I got to replace, though. I have a really good one now.
You switched it?
GameStop gave me a new one. So,
dude, mine is so much better.
Whatever. But what I've been doing, though, is I've been using that stick, and I've been playing Explosion Man and then some other older arcade games.
Excuse me? Explosion Man?
Explosion Man.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. So I've been playing Explosion Man and then a couple older arcade games, and I find the game more enjoyable using the arcade stick with the giant joystick and, like, the big buttons that I can slam.
Yeah,
like more than just the controller. So it has more of a physical feel. I don't know what it is about it, but like it's more fun to play with the full.
It's more kinesthetic.
The Pac-Man.
You know, you're moving around more.
Yeah.
Yeah. The clicks, man. The clicking does it.
There's the clicks. There's
the clackety. I can't stand the square gate on that controller. It's so frustrating.
The square gate.
It's kind of strange.
What do you want? A circular gate?
Mine has circular. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I mean, traditionally people talk about square gates and octo gates. Mine doesn't seem to have a gate. I don't know enough about
it. Yeah, yours is just a circle.
Mine's just a half joystick, and it is fantastic, and I can pull off everything I need to pull off.
Here's
I've been playing a lot of Street Fighter 4 lately.
Here's a little interesting bit of trivia. So the joysticks on a lot of Midway games, arcade games,
are pseudo-analog?
They are pseudo-analog.
49.
Exactly. They're actually not analog. They're 49-way.
49-point digital.
What?
Yeah. Gauntlet Legends uses it.
Instead of 8 directions, you have 49 to choose from.
Yeah. No, but I
that is crazy.
I'm impressed that you knew that. Yeah. That's definitely kudos points.
Expensive to purchase those joysticks, by the way.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
And Midway arcade systems have always been weird, though. Like, if you want to... I had Killer Instinct and NBA Hangtime arcade boards, and to get the sound to work was you had to connect extra wires because their sound system, like, used some special sound or whatever. So people would think that the board they bought was broken and didn't have sound, and it's just that they didn't know that those particular games had to have extra wires connected. Otherwise, you wouldn't hear anything. And I think that might have something to do with why I got the board so cheap. Like, Killer Instinct and a whole bunch of other games for like $150.
Nice.
It was pretty awesome. And in the great flood of 2009 at my parents' house, I may not have that anymore.
You don't. And then you lost your giant Steel Battalion?
Is that, no. Or Steel Battalion was upstairs in a closet. My mom called me last week to say that Steel Battalion is... She even said the box was okay.
Because I think only 12 of those still exist today. Like, nobody has them.
I saw one on Craigslist.
I have one.
Okay,
13. I saw one on Craigslist a couple days ago for only $100. So...
Only a hundred bucks.
Yeah. Well, it started off at 200. Yeah,
I'm so disappointed.
Yeah, but it's not like anybody can play.
Why hasn't this? Why hasn't the price of this appreciated hundredfold like the Nintendo World Championship cartridges?
I don't know. And to answer Zelda Play of 64, yes, I had a cabinet. I didn't have a dedicated Killer Instinct cabinet. He's asking on the chat room. I had a cabinet for Street Fighter.
Why do you not have this anymore?
Street Fighter 2 Champion Edition. It was in Indiana. I had to sell the cabinet, right?
Touche.
But I kept the boards. I sold Street Fighter 2 Hyper Fighting with the cabinet and then took the other boards, including NBA Hangtime and Killer Instinct. So anyway, it was pretty awesome. So I would love to do it again. But you can play Killer Instinct on an emulator now.
Yeah.
And you can use your joystick in the computer and play it on there. So,
Speaking of hardware.
Hardware.
Any of you guys ever... got your hot little hands on a little thing called a Cyclone Wii Remote Charger?
No. Who makes that?
Well, it's a good thing you didn't because...
do they blow up?
Apparently somebody named Griffin International makes it. And no, they don't burn up, but apparently they can get hot enough to completely burn your hands.
I'm glad that's not made by Nyko, who decided to offer us product for the Penny Arcade Expo.
Yes,
show.
Indeed, yes. It's always good when you can guarantee that your products do not burn hands.
My apparently, joystick is made by Nyko.
They've recalled 220,000 of these that have already been sold.
Wow. I wonder.
For fire hazard.
200,000?
I wonder if.
220,000, my friend.
I'm curious if they would have the same recall if it was made for non-Wii. If this was some sort of product that related to the PlayStation, PlayStation 3. So. The expectation was that it would be played by people other than children, whereas the
Don't
Wii
know.
Is generally considered playing towards children or sensitive people. Would their recall have been different?
I think children might get scorched easier than adults, but I think adults can probably get their hands burned just as easily.
Yeah. So you're talking about like first degree burns or like third?
Couldn't tell you.
Okay.
I mean, at some point the plastic has to melt, right?
You'd think
so.
Maybe it's super plastic.
I have a feeling. Oh, I don't know.
Maybe skin burns
skin
before plastic.
Skin starts to burn before plastic.
Well, hey, we're closing in on the end of the show. Do we have anything to say before we go, other than thanking Ashish for joining us in studio?
You're welcome, guys. Anytime, I'd always be happy to join you.
All right, so go in and get the demo for Trials HD, and hopefully buy it if you like it. That comes out tomorrow, Rich.
And watch Second Skin, especially if you think that your video game habits are ruining your life. Watch Second Skin. And
how long is this film?
I don't know. It's about an hour and a half. It's a feature film.
Okay. And I can give it a shot.
Yeah. And you'll either find out that there's people that are way, way more into this kind of thing than you ever imagined, and you'll feel better about yourself. Or you'll realize that you're one of them, and then you'll probably feel worse about yourself.
Really, either way, I don't know if that would make it feel good. Anyway.
Well, but it'll be a cool movie to watch.
We gotta go, everyone. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week. Don't forget to check out chatterboxgameshow.com and golgotron.com.
And asu.gaming.edu. Good night, guys.
KFNX News Talk Radio.